I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Gala Rinpoche. He is from the Drepung Losaling Monastery. He formerly lived in India. Now he lives in Atlanta, Georgia. He's a Tibetan spiritual teacher. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
So we have you and your colleagues on pretty much every year at this time because you come to Santa Fe and do a Tibetan sand mandala at Surrette and Sons, which is on Sandoval Street here in Santa Fe. And by the way, the construction of this sand mandala is going on through Sunday. We'll talk about that toward the end of the program today. But what is a sand mandala?
Sand mandala is actually the guide map for our spiritual journey. And I always telling this for the Westerner to understand is clearly, it's like GPS for spiritual journey.
A GPS for spiritual.
Our spiritual journey. Because for Buddhists or any spiritual believer, we have our ultimate goal or destination where we have to reach finally. To achieve that, we have to follow some path. So to follow that path, we need the physical guidelines. So it's like maps, and that mandala contains the entire instruction to how to reach the enlightened state, which is the Buddhist final destination.
So when we're looking at it, how do we non-Tibetan Buddhist monks understand what this map is? Like, what we see is geometrical patterns. We see a circle divided up into lots of sections. We see some figures, we see some abstract designs. Give us some examples of what these things mean. Are they all symbols?
Yeah, every detail of this very intricate arts carry the profound meaning of spiritual journey. And as a Westerner, at least we can understand that we have an external world and internal world. External world is the projection of internal world, and internal world in the ordinary mind get very confused because our ordinary mind is, in Buddhist context, is deluded with the different afflictive emotions. So the whole idea of getting enlightened in Buddhist perspective of Buddhist teaching is to get purified or get eliminated all the afflictive emotion which is deluded in our natural clay mind. So for these, those designs, like we employ those different designs and lines and patterns, all details to understand better about our current impure existence, and then how we can unfold that confusion and get enlightened through the process. So these colors imply, like I will say, like our external world and internal world, it is a composition of five elements in the Buddhist cosmology. So five elements, like we use this color green, red, blue, white, and yellow. They symbolize the five elements.
What are the five elements?
So five elements are fire elements, water elements, air elements, and wind elements, and space. But when I say wind, fire, we shouldn't understand in just a gross form of fire or ordinary earth or ordinary wind. It is a more subtle, like even in your physical body, there's soil is, earth element is like solidity of a physical form. And then wind is a lot of movements in our body. And then heat is our heat, not of ordinary fire. And then wind is, liquidity is over inside our weight, W-E-T, wetness. Inside
wetness.
It, yes, like our blood circulation inside that. Then it goes into subtler layers.
And space?
Yeah, space is everything which is contributing factor for functioning all these other elements which occurs. Without space, nothing can happen, you know. So this is something need to happen. So that is the space.
And space is the white one?
Space is usually, white.
Okay.
Yes, white one, yes.
So these are the colors that represent the elements, and as you talked about, the external world is a projection of internal mind, is that what you said?
Yeah, right. Internal mind. And also we can understand that that's a one represent, you know, this all these meanings carry a multiple interpretation of the teachings. Like, we can also imply those five color as the fundamental five afflictic emotion, or we say five mental poisons, basic fundamental.
The five poisons.
Five mental poisons.
What are the five mental poisons?
Poisons are like, number one is ignorance. From ignorance, it grows hatred, anger, jealousy, and pride.
Mm-hmm.
So these five are the, you know, actually give rise in our mind in any moment when the conditions are applied. In the ordinary impure mind, we Buddhists say it's called impure mind or enlightened, and enlightened states on ordinary mind. That's the source of all afflicting, source of all emotional problems, including depressed or stress,
and including all the social problems
that
we face in society.
Yeah, all social problems. You see, like, we have our differences. Every difference is based on our projections. Like, we judge other people's, whether they are good or bad. Then that's because that is a foundation, is a root, is a ignorant. Ignorant, we project they are due to our desire or attachment and aversion. We make the distance and make a boundary between other people and me. If that person, other people, is close to you, you have an attachment, and then you say all the good things. And if they are the odd ones or the it could be your enemy, then we project all the bad things. So it's decided in a mental affliction, decided every projections.
So when you talk about the external world as a projection of the internal world, you're mm-hmm. talking about, for example, your family
and
your workplace.
Yeah, right. Your workplace or anything in your life, including your possession, including your relationship with or including your interaction with the external world, including your interaction with the environment. Everything is your projection, because we create the world doesn't mean that we create it, directly. Because, like, even we build this house, the first and foremost, we need to come up with the idea, and then idea started developing the design and interior design, external design. Then we come up with the what material we have to use according to the weather condition, according to the the landscape, and then all this is started building up from the mental projections. So mental projection doesn't mean that we have to directly mind can create this, because some mind is the main factor component to build up that existence of your world.
Right. So whether it be your house or your workplace or your family or all kinds of things that humans have influence on, what about the external world of the ocean, the forests, the volcanoes?
Yeah, these are the also like the oceans, volcanoes. All these are in Buddhist, indirectly, it's a very complex concept, a theory that we call interdependence. So interdependence come due to the collective karma to experience that environment. Then we have accumulated collected that karma, like ocean in the Pacific Oceans. Those who can utilize or can feel the beauty of that by sailing through this beautiful ocean. We cannot do, everybody cannot do that. The certain individual can do that. But overall, the 7 billion people benefiting those oceans through ecosystem.
Right, but those oceans were there long before people.
Yeah.
Long before life.
Long before life. I don't know, the Western scientists may say, but in Buddhist context, they are formed because we created that karma. But it's difficult to experience, explain right now that it's because it comes like this. So I have this naturally formed, naturally formed because of previous actions. I don't remember right now the perfect metaphor for this concept, like theory of evolution of the universe itself. So in for Buddhism, the universe first formed through the five elements, which was accumulated, subtly, five elements we accumulated in our past lives.
So we're talking to Gyalo Rinpoche about the Tibetan sand mandala. Let's go back to the mandala itself. What is the origin of this tradition? How did people start doing this?
The origin is actually the many people have in the West asked this question that who designed this? Do any particular monk have come up with this idea, or do it's a spontaneous kind of spiritual manifestation of the external beauty? Then, for our tradition, it is taught by Lord Buddha, the founder of Buddhism, 2,500 years in India, to show or to engaging or initiated his students to the higher consciousness, or we call this a spiritual liberation, where he draw this kind of map to show the enlightened states or the celestial palace of the enlightened deity, and that for this also condense the how we can achieve that enlightened states or celestial palace through engaging the path which lead to that state. So that was teach by Buddha 2,500 years ago. So its origin is from India, and then also the Hinduism has a similar concept or similar
Practice.
practice. Yes.
Now, the fact that it's not only a complex form rich with symbolism, but it's incredibly beautiful and it has a kind of perfection that is mind-boggling. So when you're seeing the monks putting down almost grain by grain each little piece of sand, and they seem not to make any mistakes, and there's a tremendous symmetry and beauty to this. What is the role? What is the purpose of beauty?
Oh, yeah. So here the purpose of beauty is how you can project or how can utilize those art in your life in ordinary as a being an ordinary person. We could say like just, an ordinary person, even you don't have any idea about the Buddhist belief and Buddhist philosophy or Buddhist principles. But just so you know, we Buddhists say that even you have a glimpse of this sacred, holy, precious art, it brings a huge positive impact on our mental set or mind, mental attitude. Which means if I'm really depressed and I may go to see these monks creating this beautiful art, it's just let me forget all my miserable feelings and thoughts. And that is just a basic idea. But we can look at them and reflect it over life, because millions of beautiful color, individual colors are component or contributing factor to bring this very intricate, complex beauty of arts which we can see in front of our eyes. And if we reflected that art into our life is much more complex and beautiful than this art. And only thing we have the problem is because we only remember those small problem in our life, and then that's occupy entire our mind and didn't get the opportunity to see the beauty of our life. And then also we can reflect that this millions of individuals are also contributing factors or for our well-beings, and it is having the beautiful life, complete complex life, directly or indirectly, let's say like including our house, our working place, our clothes, our grocery, all these are because we have that privilege to utilize this, because many millions of directly, indirectly, or consciously or unconsciously, all they are there for us. Without them, our life could become incomplete, and even if we have millions of dollars, we will not have a beautiful life like this. So it's indicated that our life is a complex, beautiful, but it is a totally interdependent for others. So the whole purpose of the Lama's concept of taking care of others is the number one to cherish your own well-being. That is makes sense, because if you neglected your source of your well-being, which is those other people, rest of other people, excluding you, if they are contributing factor for your well-being, why we are neglecting them? Because after all, those are so, you know, like what I'm trying to say is, you can reflect it that to the mandala was looking that.
So this idea that the whole rest of the world, in one way or another, contributes to our well-being,
right?
And we want to be also contributing to everybody else's
well-being. So that means we are the interdependent natures.
Right.
Yeah, we cannot neglect other people's because we for our own interest. Because indirectly, it's also we are neglecting our own well-beings.
Right. Although in the short run, people might not see it that way or experience that way.
Right. But the conscious being mindful every day, and then we can see. Yeah.
We're talking to Gala Rinpoche. So do all monks who are involved in groups like yours who do sand paintings, or sand mandalas, do they all learn this technique? Did you learn this technique?
And actually, if we train in a Buddhist philosophy and a Buddhist rigorous spiritual academic training, one should know exactly how to get enlightened. So that definitely means we have to know at least the whole meaning of the mandala. And so, yeah, in my monastery, we studied entire meaning about this for like 25 years. That's even, you know, particular, you know, I didn't learn how to pour the sand to mm-hmm. design that, but I know the meanings, you know. So,
but I mean, to pour the sand and to be those guys who tap these little cones and then the mm-hmm. beautiful colored grains mm-hmm. come out, are those people, I mean, like in Western culture, some kids come up through school and they're the artists mm-hmm. and they have a particular gift.
Is it
like those people in the monastery who do this?
Actually, in our academic curriculum in our monastic university, this is not included in our curriculum. We are like more or less like the university, so we study mostly on academic things, not on the arts. And then after completing the our philosophical class, then we can join to one of these Tantric University or Lobo Tantric University. We can join there and study there 2 years about these arts.
Okay.
And then for Buddhism, the art and the beauty of that physical form is not important. The meaning behind, to understand the meaning behind and the meaning concept behind the beauty, the art is important. Art is just used as a tool to understand the deeper meaning about our spiritual life.
But I think for so many artists, the continual practice and perfection of craft has in itself a spiritual effect.
Of course. Anything, you know, in Buddhism, you can transform any activity, whether it's your physical activity, mental activity, you can transform them completely into your spiritual life, including, you know, like overeating, overworking, overthinking. Even your sleep can transform into a spiritual path. So it's dependent on our motivation, how our motivation shape, you know. So it's all totally dependent on our motivation with it. Yeah, but you can transform every moment in your life can be spiritual. But the Buddha says spiritual life and your way of life is not separate. They should be inseparable. So
right.
It's all dependent on our motivation.
So have you gotten responses from people, Americans, for example, here in Santa Fe or other places where you've done these sand mandalas, about how it affected them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard a number of people, because this sand mandala is one of the very popular, well-known Buddhist arts in the West, especially here in America. People love to see these. And I met a few individuals who have told me directly that how it's touched their heart and transform their life, you know. And then, of course, it's a very emotional moments in the end or beginning of the process. Many people get very emotional, especially when we do the dismantling ceremony. People get upset, people get sad, yeah. People get a very emotional feeling, and some people crying. And the beginning we thought that wise man may not so interested in these kind of things, but you know, from all the ages, from old, young, everybody wants to share the sense and believing that this is really healing poverty, you know. So that was something very unique in Buddhist. Of course, there are many people who are interested in meditation, but this was more, you know, I mean, the people love that.
They want to take little pieces of sand home.
Yeah.
I mean, when the mandala is finished, the closing ceremony, which, by the way, is this coming Sunday at 3:00, and people can come and see this, basically this beautiful, exquisite, intricate, delicate, perfect thing is with one sweep of an arm swept up and swept away.
Right.
Which is a kind of very quick symbol of impermanence.
Right. Actually, you know, the dismantling ceremony or closing ceremony in the Zen Mandala is one of the most profound spiritual concept of Buddhism, and it is a driving force for a spiritual journey.
Now, does it affect you emotionally each time when it's swept up?
No, it shouldn't be affected, but we should be reminded every day when we do this, or whether we live or sleep. Actually, we should live with the concept of remembering our impermanence, including our death.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a very important teaching for us.
Gala Rinpoche is from the Drepung Losaling Monastery, which is based both in India and Atlanta, Georgia. He lives in Atlanta and visits Santa Fe every year. And once again, the Sand Mandala is being constructed, being put together at Surrett & Sons Gallery, which is at 121 Sandoval Street next to Alpine Sports. And you can see this going on every day from 10 to 4:30, well, every day meaning today and tomorrow. Sunday, the construction ends at about 2, at which time the Sand Mandala will be on view and Gala Rinpoche will give a talk, and then the closing ceremony will be at 3, December 7th on Sunday. I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you very much. We really appreciate for your precious time to give us this opportunity to share with the people in the Santa Fe. Thank you.
We also want to let people know that we talked a while ago on this program about the workshop called Human Power of Compassion, Emerging Insights in CBCT Research, and that stands for Cognitively Based Compassion Training, and that's with Geshe Lobsang Tenzin Negi. And that is happening tomorrow, actually, the 6th of September from 2 to 4:30. It's also happening at Surrett & Sons Gallery. You can get tickets at the door. There's a suggested donation, but nobody is turned away for inability to pay. For more information, you can call 660-3352. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.